tried to allow some time for members to arrive. Possibly there should be something wrong outside, and we will proceed with the work of today. I just wanted to indicate that today we are convening a seminar on African Union Vision 2063 as it relates to migration. And we have invited knowledgeable persons on this particular subject to assist us to have a fuller understanding of what it means as we move along as part of the African continent towards 2063. Honorable members and our guests, we have extended the invitation to our portfolio committee members on international relations and cooperation, and we are very happy that the chairperson Obaba Masango is here. Then we have got Honorable Dudley is here, and we are very grateful for participating. We hope that other members, if they find an opportunity, will join us, and we also welcome the Deputy Minister is here of Home Affairs, and the delegation that we have from Home Affairs, over and above the Deputy Minister, we have got the DDG on Immigration. Mr. Jackson McKay is here. Then we have got Advocate Tshwele Mecha is here. And then we also supposed to have Usihle Mthiyane is here. And then we have got Muzi Njoko, is a parliamentary officer, is here. Then from the speakers that we have invited, we can say that Dr. Mtembu is here. And then also Dr. Emmanuel Sekere, I hope I pronounced it properly. I'm just trying to dig deep into my phonetics. Yes, he's from Africa Institute of South Africa is here. And then Dr. Jan Beziki, something like that. Yes, and he's here from the Institute of Security Studies. I'm informed that Mr. Popo Mfubu is not yet here. And then we have got Sergio Kashioto. I've performed. Yes, that's from Scala Brain Institute for Human Mobility in Africa. I think they are the speakers that have been invited as they are reflected on the program. And now, the honorable members that we are not expecting to be with us today on the basis of their apologies is Honorable Hussein has apologized, and then Honorable S.J. Nkomo also is not here, but I think last week I phoned her. She feels that she's improving, and we hope that she will improve a little bit faster, and so that she can take a rightful place in the committee. We hope that we'll see her very soon. then the Minister of Home Affairs, our brand new minister, I think is still on leave, is on study leave. We hope that as the week go by, then we'll be seeing her, she'll be joining us. I think that is the apologies from the honorable members. Without much ado, honorable members and guests, we are busy with the white paper on international migration. And that is one of the reasons why we have actually convened this seminar, to ensure that we also have full understanding of the implications of migration on our pieces of legislation that we are trying to put together to manage migration. Then the launch of the white paper on international migration in 2017 by the Department of Home Affairs, of course in collaboration with various stakeholders, took place in the context of regional integration initiatives by both the Southern African Development Community and the African Union. The East African Community and the Economic Community of West African States, ordinarily called ECOWAS, have already implemented visa-free travel for citizens of their respective regions. And in contrast, however, the global security regime in the context of international conflict, refugee flows and terrorist threats calls for the upgrading of risk prevention mechanisms. South Africa has become a major destination and entry point to the continent and the world. Migrants from the African continent as far as the Horn of Africa transit through South Africa to their destination countries in Europe and North America. World leaders, including politicians and business persons, travel through South Africa to the region. Low-skilled working class migrants both travel to South Africa and transit through the country to other destinations. The tightening of borders in Europe and the continuing political instability across the continent has meant that South Africa continues to receive a high number of asylum seekers from the continent and almost all regions of the world. South Africa has also become a destination for investors. This has led to major conglomerates in the manufacturing and service industries establishing their regional offices and assembly plants in South Africa, using the country as a base to explore business opportunities in other countries. South African companies are increasingly expanding their businesses into other countries in Africa. South Africa also attracts tourists from all the regions of the world because of its natural beauty, vibrant culture, and various tourist attractions. And it has become a major venue for conferences and international events. South Africans have taken advantage of globalization and have migrated to various countries, and the diaspora abroad are an untapped resource which needs renewed initiatives to develop. In responding to both the opportunities and challenges presented by these flows in 2013, Cabinet mandated the Department of Home Affairs to lead the establishment of the Border Management Authority in South Africa. This is premised on a new policy paradigm of integrated border management, which promotes the objectives of the National Development Plan and subscribes to the ideals of the continent's Agenda 2063. We know that this agenda 2063 has got about seven pillars or aspirations, but we are a lot more attached to the second one that talks about an integrated continent, politically united, based on the ideals of Pan-Africanism. That's the one that we are actually trying to shine a lot of light on it. What does it mean? In order to facilitate the seven ideals, the outgoing African Union chairperson, Ms. Dlamini Zuma, launched the AU passport in 2016 to pave the way for the common passport document. This will replace existing national passports and grant member states of the African Union visa exemption in all 55 African states. While the concept is in place, there remain significant policy and logistical challenges to be overcome to implement the AU passport beyond the few heads of states that currently have it. In 2014, South Africa ascribed to the SADC Parliamentary Forum motion, which calls on member parliaments to contribute to knowledge and ownership of the objectives of Agenda 2063 and to assist in developing sustainable national and regional planning frameworks with targets that are measurable and monitored. It stresses the need for regional cooperation in creating enabling infrastructure to strengthen regional economic integration and expand intra-regional trade and investment. The South African National Assembly, through its committees, is thus focusing on the role it will play in the implementation of Agenda 2063 through its oversight and the likes of this seminar and related joint sittings. We therefore have invited the number of speakers today on this seminar to actually shine the light on this Agenda 2063 as it relates to migration, and so that we can have all the tools that are required to say we have got the correct piece of legislation to manage the flow of people as we move towards 2063. We hope that honorable members, that the speakers will then assist us to understand fully what it takes to actually achieve the ideals of this Agenda 2063. What are the pros and cons? What is there that we need to open our eyes wider for? And what are the things that we should clap hands for as we move forward? And therefore, honorable members, I just need to really invite your contributions as we move forward. We expect that after the presentation of the guests that we have invited, then we will have a panel discussion where we would be able to throw questions of clarity and dig deep into the knowledgeable persons that we have invited for us to have much more clarity. You therefore have to ensure that you jot down some notes to the relevant speakers, so that when the time arrives, then we should be able to direct the questions to the specific guests that we have invited for further clarity on what they would have said. Our first speaker, of course, is going to be Dr. Pilan Mthembu. He hasn't prepared slides. He's going to talk from notes and speak to us on the Vision 2063 in relation to migration. And we We have tried to allocate almost all the speakers, roughly 20 minutes, and we hope that it will work out for us today. Can we then call upon Dr. Mthembu to take us on? Thank you very much. You can proceed if you are ready.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, colleagues. Thank you for the invitation. And thank you just for the opportunity. My job is actually, I think, out of all the speakers, I think mine is the easiest. Because I've been asked to basically summarize how Agenda 2063 speaks to the issues of migration, regional integration, and the AU passport. So I'm literally summarizing, the critical areas within the Agenda 2063 in how it relates to those specific areas. I think to start off, what's important to note is that when the document starts, it says, "We the people of Africa and her diaspora." I think that's an important issue to highlight there, that when we think of Africa, we think not just continental Africa, but we think global Africa. And we know that the Constitutive Act of the African Union includes the diaspora as the sixth region of Africa. So I think throughout this discussion of on migration, on regional integration, it's important to always have at the back of our minds or at the front of our minds that it actually includes the African diaspora. So it's an idea of global Africa. There are seven key aspirations, and aspiration number two speaks directly, to these issues. But what I've done is gone through all of the aspirations and just picked out where there are specific references to these three topics. I've highlighted them. So the first aspiration for Agenda 2063 is a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development. But I think, as I said before, when looking at the diaspora, it's important to keep in mind that we're also not just speaking about the terrestrial Africa, just, the land. We're also speaking about the blue economy. We're speaking about, the oceans. And if we look at the maritime perimeter of the continent, it is three times the size of its actual landmass. So that's an important aspect of the continent's regional integration. And you see it in Aspiration 1, where it looks to the growth of an Africa-wide shipping industry, the development of the sea, river, and lake transport and fishing. Now, that's something that's not going to take place by individual countries. That's a continental initiative and a key part of Africa's regional integration. So how we actually collectively govern and actually exploit the wealth of our oceans as a continent. The second aspiration is an integrated continent, politically united and based on the ideals of Pan-Africanism and vision of Africa's renaissance. Now here the key points is to essentially say that Africa wants to have an integrative infrastructure that crisscrosses the continent. This is an important aspect that will facilitate regional integration and the movement of people. It also speaks of a dynamic and mutually beneficial links with her diaspora, which I've mentioned, and really stresses, that we want to be a continent of seamless borders and management of cross-border resources through dialogue. Much has been written about the amount of time people spend at the borders. That's just, people as individuals, but also businesses. So it's a key priority in integrating the continent to have those seamless borders and actually reduce the time that people are spending at the borders. Some of the key paragraphs that come out in terms of the second aspiration is basically that, you know, for the political unity of Africa, it will be a culmination of the integration process, which includes the free movement of people and the establishment of continental institutions leading to full economic integration. And that by 2030, there will be consensus on the form of the continental governmental institutions. Again, it stresses the issue of the free movement of people, and it says that Africa shall be a continent where the free movement of people, capital, goods and services will result in significant increases in trade and investments amongst African countries, rising to unprecedented levels, and in strengthening of Africa's place in global trade. So that, you know, goes to the point, I say, you reduce the time at the borders, you increase the movement of people, and that should result in a significant increase in trade and investment across the, or at least within the continent. And that it also envisions, you know, big and key infrastructure projects, which basically connect the key cities on the continent, as part of the process of facilitating regional integration and the movement of people. So it envisions, for instance, a high-speed railway networks, roads, shipping lanes, sea and air transport, as well as well-developed ICT and the digital economy. Now, this is all supposed to facilitate the issues that we are discussing today, regional integration and the mobility of people. So you're talking about a pan-African high-speed train network, you know, which connects essentially all of the Africa's hubs, and that is seen in the Agenda 2063 as a catalyst for manufacturing, for skills development, technology, research and development, and integration on the continent. So it really speaks, the second aspiration, it really speaks to the heart of the topic that we are discussing today, and really envisions an integrated continent in all forms. You know, just to stress this, what an impact an integrated infrastructure would have is that it envisions that the world-class infrastructure, accompanied by trade facilitation, will see intra-Africa trade growing from less than 12% in 2013 to approaching 50% by 2045. Africa's share of global trade shall rise from 2% to 12%. And that will be facilitated by that infrastructure. Now, that's a key aspect of that integration, because you put people, you allow people to move more freely, but then you also ensure that you're building the infrastructure that facilitates that, and that you're ensuring that you're reducing their times at the borders, and that, you know, in turn leads to intra-Africa trade growing from 12% in 2013 and approaching 50%. That's significant, and we've seen it also in terms of South Africa prioritizing intra-Africa trade. The next three, so aspiration three, it's basically an Africa of good governance, democracy, respect for human rights, justice and the rule of law. Aspiration four, it's a peaceful and secure Africa. Aspiration five, it's an Africa with a strong cultural identity, common heritage and shared value and ethics. Now that's an important one because it also links to what we're discussing here today. If we're going to support regional integration, if we're going to encourage it, if we're going to encourage the free movement of people, then we also need to foster pan-African ideals through strong cultural identity. And their Agenda 2063 basically highlights the following. It says, pan-African ideals will be fully embedded in all school curricula, and pan-African cultural assets, so that's heritage, folklore, languages, film, music, theatre, literature, festivals, religions and spirituality. Now that will be enhanced, it will be encouraged, because you're trying to create with the free movement of people, you're ensuring that you're building the infrastructure, but you're also building the soft infrastructure in the form of culture and a curriculum that is actually pan-African. So that when I go from here to Zambia or to Nigeria, we're actually reading similar textbooks and histories of our continent. So it really prioritizes the African creative arts and industries and celebrates them. And not just of continental Africa, but also the diaspora. One of the aspirations here under number 5, it says African languages will be the basis for administration and integration. I mean, that's you know, clear. You're trying to promote culture, pan-African culture, then you're also trying to also promote the growth and the development of certain African languages. And that is seen as an important part of regional integration, but also of building common identity. Aspiration number 6 goes into, it talks of an Africa whose development is people-driven, relying on the potential of African people, especially its women and youth, and caring for children. Aspiration number 7, the final aspiration, it speaks of Africa as a strong, united, and influential global player and partner. And here it really speaks about if we want to integrate, if we want to create a common identity, if we want to build the infrastructure that supports integration and the movement of people, then we also need to think about our international partnerships. And it means that that we need to approach our international partnerships in a manner that will enhance these aspirations. So it says that Africa is on an upward trend and seeks mutually beneficial relations and partnerships with other regions and continents. It therefore looks at the nature of partnerships with a view to rationalizing them and enhancing the benefits to its transformation and integration efforts. So this ideal is really about the idea of pooling sovereignty and not engaging with all our external partners only as single nation states. And while you're not going to reduce, you know, bilateral relations, but it's basically alluding to the idea that with some of our strategic partners, we need to be engaging them with one voice. We need to be engaging them as an integrated continent and channeling resources towards enhancing regional integration from our external partners. And then it basically goes into a call for action. So the heads of state and government basically, you know, taking into account these 7 aspirations, they go into a call for action. And they say, you know, what's going to be important in all of this is also the harmonization of education standards and mutual recognition of academic and professional qualifications. Now that's important. If you're encouraging the free movement of people, you're building regional infrastructure that facilitates that, you're building a common identity, you are building a pan-African curriculum in the schools across the continent, it then becomes important that if someone is coming from, you know, from Central African Republic or from Kenya or from Nigeria, that if they're coming now to study in South Africa, essentially, that's what this speaks to. Harmonization of education standards and mutual recognition of academic and professional qualifications. And in doing that, the heads of state argue that we need to establish an African accreditation agency to develop and monitor educational quality standards with a view of expanding student and academic mobility across the continent. It also speaks about connecting Africa, you know, through the world-class infrastructure that I mentioned, and establishing the Continental Free Trade Area by 2017, a program to basically double intra-Africa trade by 2022. So that's an important initiative, a Continental Free Trade Area. And that's something, you know, that also is important, I think, to the work of the committee in terms of constantly assessing how far we are with these major initiatives on the continent. And basically, in adding emphasis to the idea of curricula across the continent, the heads of state argue that we need to ensure faster movement on the harmonization of continental admissions, curricula standards, programs, and qualifications, and raising the standards of higher education to enhance the mobility of African youth and talent across the continent. And then the heads of state go into the African passport, and they say we need to introduce an African passport issued by member states, capitalizing on the global migration towards e-passports and with the abolishment of visa requirements to all African citizens in all African countries by 2018. So it puts concrete, it puts an actual deadline, you know, Agenda 2063. Now, we're not far from 2018. So, these are all the issues, I think, you know, in terms of the work of the committee in saying, you know, how far are we in terms of actually getting there, and will we actually meet that deadline? And if we don't meet that deadline, what needs to be done in order to meet it? And then it calls for enhancing Africa's voice in global negotiations through pooled sovereignty, integration, and the development of common African positions. We already have some common positions in terms of climate change, in terms of the post-2015 development agenda. So that's really what it's calling for. And then finally, Agenda 2063 looks at critical enablers for Africa's transformation. It says we need to strengthen and transform. If we want to go in that direction of the vision, we need to strengthen and transform regional and continental institutions and the manner in which we do business so as to effectively lead and drive the agenda for transformation and integration. In parallel to this, you obviously have the Kagame report, which looks at how to transform the AU institutions and make them actually more efficient and help us to meet these aspirations of Agenda 2063. It calls for a pan-African perspective. I mean, that's a critical enabler to meeting this. You need to have a pan-African perspective through solidarity, integration, implementation of our programs, and pool sovereignty on critical issues of continental and global dimensions. And then finally, a key enabler is clearly the aligning and integrating Agenda 2063 in our national and regional development plans, and ensuring that we provide the AU Commission and other regional and continental institutions with the necessary capacities and resources to effectively drive the implementation of Agenda 2063. So that's really, you know, just summarizing, you know, the entire document and how it relates to specifically to issues of migration, regional integration, and the AU passport. I think other colleagues will then delve into some of the other issues in more detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's appreciated that we have put it a lot more clear. Honorable members, I'm not sure whether it would not assist us if we're able to see the speakers, because we have put the speakers, all of them, this side. If it were worth your while to shift this way, then you can also do that to be able to see the speakers if you want to. But if you are comfortable, also it is fine. Honorable members, I think I just need to indicate who is Pilar Mthembu. We just did not do it right at the beginning, and I think it is necessary that we should know who has been talking to us. He's an executive director at the Institute of Global Dialogue. Prior to joining the Institute for Global Dialogue associated with UNISA, Mr. Mthembu pursued a joint doctoral program with the Graduate School of Global Politics. It's the Freie Universität in Berlin and the School of International Studies at Renmin University in Beijing. He conducted his field research at the latter. The focus of his dissertation was on the rise of emerging powers as sources of development cooperation in Africa. The study was essentially a comparative analysis of the determinants of their development cooperation in Africa using qualitative comparative analysis, for which he was awarded an overall grade of magna cum laude. During his time abroad, he co-founded the Berlin Forum on Global Politics, a non-profit organization dedicated to the promotion of academic, expert, and public understanding of global politics. He is an alumna of the Managing Global Governance Program established by the German Federal Minister of Economic Cooperation and Development, designed for young professionals from emerging economies. As an expert, he has actively participated in various international conferences, symposia, and workshops related to global politics. He received his Master of Arts in International Relations at the University of Witwatersrand, Johannesburg, where he headed the academic development program for first-year students and was elected as an independent candidate to the Student Representative Council. That's Dr. Pilar Mthembu. Thank you very much. Honorable members, then would invite the next speaker, whom we expect that should debate these issues. And our next speaker is Dr. Emmanuel Segere. He is the Chief Research Specialist at the Africa Institute of South Africa in the Human Science Research Council, where he leads the Sustainable Development Research Theme. He holds a PhD in Economics from the University of Pretoria, South Africa, and a Master's degree in Economic Management and Policy from the University of Strathclyde, Glasgow, Scotland, United Kingdom. His areas of research interest include migration and development, poverty and inequality, infrastructure development, remittances to sub-Saharan Africa, inclusive and sustainable growth and development, and financial inclusion. Dr. Emmanuel is a member of several professional groups and also reviews for a number of peer-reviewed journals. Dr. Segere has several journal article publications in ISI and the IBSS accredited journals. His research output can be followed on REPEC ResearchGate and HSRC website. So that is Dr. Emmanuel Segere. If you are ready, you can take us on. Thank you very much. Maybe I should just indicate that he has got slides, I think, for Dr. Segere.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Honourable Members of Parliament, thank you very much for this invitation to present here. I've been asked to speak on prerequisites for integration on the African continent, a people-to-people perspective or movement of people, the dimension of the African integration agenda. I'll go lightly by this outline and look at aspirations of the Abuja Treaty of 1991,
with respect to movement of people in the context of regional integration. I also look at how it interlinks with Agenda 2063. I look at the status quo and indirect comparison in terms of implementation. We'll also look at the benefits of movement of people, pertaining challenges that still exist and prerequisites for achieving movement of people. And then at the end, we'll attempt some conclusions and recommendations. The Abuja Treaty of 1991 established the African Economic Community concept or idea, and the aim was to promote economic, social, and cultural development and the integration of African economies in order to increase self-reliance and promote an endogenous and self-sustained development. The reason being that Africa is a small and fragmented and less developed, a continent of small, fragmented, and less developed states. The essence was to integrate or join forces through integration to achieve a larger market, a larger labor force, technological and skills transfer, free capital mobility, in the process some scale and scope economies in production and growth, inclusive growth, and enhance our collective comparative and competitive edge in a highly competitive and unfavorable global environment. In the dimension that relates to the movement of people, African leaders and states committed to promoting free movement of persons, establishing rights of residence, rights of establishment, single tourist visas, and regional passports. They also committed to urge one another to adopt employment policies that allow for free movement of persons within the proposed African economic community. They also endeavored to cooperate in education and training, coordinate and harmonize their policies for developing the capacity and skills required to enhance social progress in the development of the continent. Now, how does these objectives link with Agenda 2063? The agenda talks about an integrated continent, politically united and based on the ideals of Pan-Africanism and the vision of Agenda 2063. It also talks about an Africa with a strong cultural identity, common heritage, shared values and ethics. Again, we talk about an Africa whose development is people-driven, relying on the potential of African people, especially its women, youth, and caring for its children. Recently, there has been additional policy development in that direction. Now, besides the Treaty of 1991, the Agenda 2063, as Dr. Ntembu said, calls for free visa travel by all Africans within Africa by 2018. We've seen the African Development Bank's Africa Visa Openness Index report of 2016, trying to monitor progress across the continent. We've seen the launch of the African passport at the 27th Africa Summit in Kigali, Rwanda. A number of African countries have moved towards offering visa on arrival to citizens of AU member states as well. So some progress has been made in that direction. Okay. Now, what is the implementation across RECs in the region? Along the dimensions of free movement protocol implementation, the common passport, universal tourist visa, right of establishment for business, you notice that when it comes to the free movement protocol, ECOWAS is the only REC that has implemented that fully. East African community, specifically Rwanda, Kenya, and Uganda, have implemented that among themselves as well. If you look at the Arab and Maghreb Union, only 3 out of 5 countries in the community of Sahel and Saharan states, it's not very clear how much progress has been made. COMESA, only Burundi has ratified. Look at Economic Community of Central African States, 4 out of 11 countries. SADC, 7 out of 15 countries. If you look at the common passport category as well, only ECOWAS again has a common passport for all 15 countries. You have the ECOWAS passport. Rwanda and Kenya and Uganda have some kind of arrangement among themselves. The rest of the RECs are yet to make any progress in that direction. If you look at Universal Tourist Visa, again, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda have established that. In ECOWAS, visas are not required, so you are not limited in your movements in any way whatsoever. The other RECs are still trying to see how to implement that. ECAS is in progress, and ECAS SADC also says in progress. If you look at the right of establishment, again, ECOWAS leads there for business purposes. SADC, no. Yes, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda have made some progress there. The other RECs are still struggling to implement or make any progress in that direction. Again, if you look at African Development Bank's composite free movement score, it's a composite variable, a composite indicator that involves three variables, how many countries in AREC have ratified the Free Movement of People Protocol? How many countries offer visas on arrival? And how many countries offer no visa or require no visa for visitation? So it's a composite score that ranges between 0 and 1. Towards 0 means very low implementation. Towards 1 means very high implementation. If you look at the scores again, ECOWAS leads 0.8, followed by East African Community and SADC, 0.53 for SADC. The continental average is 0.52, so SADC narrowly escapes the average of the continent according to these scores. So you see that across the RECs, implementation is not uniform. Some have made tremendous progress, others are coming bit by bit, and there are reasons for that. Again, if you take a look at the top 20 most visa-open countries in Africa, 8 are from East Africa, 1 from North Africa, 3 from Southern Africa, and 5 from West Africa. In the West African case, it's more of free movement, totally free movement. In the East African case, it's more of visa on arrival facilities for countries to travel. The dimension of standardizing capacity and skill development for social progress and development, again, if you look at along three dimensions, university exams, educational training programs, exchanges, cultural exchanges, you notice that ECOWAS is the only REC where they all write the same exam, university entry exam. It's called the West African Examination Council. All the countries write the same entry exam, and the pass mark is 50%. No other REC does that. However, in terms of inter-university exchanges, most of the RECs have very high level of cooperation among their tertiary institutions in the RECs in the African context. In terms of CENSAT and ICAS, it's not very clear what pertains there yet. In terms of cultural exchanges, we are very highly integrated. We speak similar languages, similar cultural practices. We have very high level of collaboration in music and arts within the RECs and across the continent. So we've made more progress in this dimension than the two previous dimensions. Now, what are the benefits for free movement on the continent? There are some benefits for free movement on the continent. First of all, none of the other dimensions of African integration can be achieved without adequate or significant flexibility in movement of people on the continent. If you take trade integration, productive integration, infrastructure, financial and macroeconomic integration, all of them require movement of people. It requires that the people, the citizens of the continent, should be able to move around freely. Again, there's a very uneven distribution of skill across the continent. Some countries have skill surpluses, others have acute skill deficits. It's believed that if there's perfect mobility of skill and expertise around the continent, we'll be able to mitigate this uneven distribution of skill on the continent to help address Africa's labor needs, especially in the areas of education, health, and industrial sectors. The African Development Bank has estimated that Africa needs 4 million more teachers and 2 million health workers to meet this skills gap. And it's believed that significant potential exists on the continent if we can distribute the skill and expertise among ourselves within the continent. Again, free movement of people will increase cross-border economic activity with a strong potential for growth, job creation and growth. At the moment, a lot of our cross-border trade is informal and cannot even be captured through our data in the data space. Rwanda just reported that there's been a 22% increase in African business and tourism, business travelers and tourism. Over time, it's expected it will extend into trade benefits as well. So that's a solid example of the benefits of allowing people to move freely on the continent. A more specific example is with SADC. SADC produces about 60% of the world's rough gem diamonds, and the cutting and polishing industry globally generates 800,000 jobs in that industry. Sadly, only 1% of those jobs are in SADC on the continent. And that's a huge lost opportunity for Africa's 200 million youth, comprising 60% of Africa's labor force. The question is, what skills, what policies, what facilities are required for SADC to bring approximately 60% of the 800,000 jobs back to the continent, at least commensurate to a 60% market share? And how can other African countries help? Yes, other African countries have diamonds as well. They have lots of unemployed youth who can all be trained and capacity built to make them relevant. There are also opportunities for regional value chains in this respect. So does movement of labor help in this case? Yes, definitely would help in this case. for inclusive regional growth, job creation, poverty reduction, and improved well-being. SADC alone does not have enough people, enough skill to bring a lot of that back to the continent. The other countries on the continent have the potential to get involved and bring at least a percentage that is commensurate to our market share back to the continent. Between now and 2035, 400 million people will join the labor force in Africa. We don't have the jobs for these people. You heard about the youth dividend, Africa's demographic dividend. The point is that the challenge is that there are no jobs for this dividend. And instead of this becoming a dividend, it could end up becoming a very strong source of instability on the African continent. So we need to focus on free movement of people, diversifying economies, creating regional value chains that will create jobs for this upcoming challenge. Okay. Now, it would be wrong to assume that there are only benefits to free movement of people. We also have challenges to free movement of people that we need to address. There are very strong challenges that pertain. I look at six key challenges along these four dimensions: security concerns and political instability, institutional factors, fear of migration, and a number of unanswered questions. First of all, if you look at the continent, we still have pockets of conflict and wars, quite a number of them. And if you looked at the performance of the RECs, you notice that it wasn't even. Some were very low, some were high. And there are reasons for that. In certain regional economic communities, what they need is stronger controls of movement than free movement, because they have strong security challenges in their neighborhood. You have Boko Haram in West Africa. You have Al-Qaeda in the Arab Peninsula, somewhere in Central Africa. You have Al-Shabaab in the Horn of the continent. And you have still governance challenges spread throughout the continent. So free movement of people does not sell for everybody, especially RECs where there are strong security controls and conflicts and wars that have lasted such a long time. In terms of institutional factors, Dr. Ntemu mentioned that as well, Africa is known for weak policy implementation capacity. We are good at designing continental programs or national level programs, how to break them down into doable, tangible programs and projects is a challenge. It's a very big challenge up till now. Like our national development plans, it's a challenge. So we have the program or design or framework up, hanging up there becomes a white elephant. We can't translate that into implementation to benefit our peoples. And then there are differing political priorities at country level. As I just gave some, the priority is security and controls of movement. Others, the priority is free movement of people to enjoy the economic benefits of that. So our political priorities at country level differ depending on where on the continent you are located. Now this creates a conflict between national interest and regional interest. If you look at the progress made so far, the diversity in the progress made so far, you notice that the 2018 timeline of Agenda 23 is quite ambitious. We're not on the same page as a continent yet. We have a challenge of poor institutions and red tape. I don't say much about that. We all know a lot of that already. Then the fourth challenge is fear of migration and related challenges. It's also believed that free movement of people would make criminal transborder networks flourish. It would enhance criminal transborder networks. We've seen the conflict and negative effects on social cohesion of migration. We saw the Somali Kenyans, migrants in Kenya. In South Africa, we had our own experiences over and over again, driven by competition for services, jobs, and local resources. As African countries, we are more tolerant of foreigners from the global north than each other from our neighborhood and backyard. It's a very strange development observation to make. We have different levels of competence when it comes to immigration management. So free movement of people still has some challenges that we need to address before it actually happens. And then you have shifting loyalties. African countries belong to several different RECs. If you look at this diagram here, it shows you the cobweb of memberships and the multiple memberships of RECs of African countries. Now, this confusion here translates into policy coordination. It becomes a big challenge to coordinate policy constructively and easily using multiple memberships of RECs and multiple different implications of those memberships. And then there are still some unanswered questions. Is an African passport and free movement really the answers to Africa's problems? We have political instability, wars and conflicts, lack of good leadership, governance challenges. Is the priority movement of people? Is the priority a common passport? Can we start with visa on arrival? Is that not adequate? So a lot of countries have a lot of questions that are still not answered to come along effectively as expected. Now, what should African countries do? I'll end with that. First of all, we probably need to revisit some of our integration aspirations, look at them holistically, and revise some agreed timelines. We need to see, looking at the realities on the ground, we need to probably revise some initially agreed timelines. And in the process, we need to weigh the anticipated benefits of the integration against the realities of our continent and the cost of integration that could emerge. There could be external negative externalities to the movement of people, and we need to take that into consideration. The question is, should we stagger implementation? Should we go first to visa on arrival and then probably visa waivers for the immediate countries and neighbors with whom we have a high bilateral trade agreement, or we should go straight to the Africa passport in 2018? It's not very certain. A lot of issues emerge that we still need to consider in that respect. We have very serious house cleaning to do. We have a lot of issues to address. We have the issue of our level of assessments of each other and our cultures from our own backyard, the ability of our security forces to effectively fight crime across borders. It's not very competent as of now. Our political instability, our wars and conflicts, our leadership deficit, institutional quality, weak implementation capacity, all these are house cleaning issues that we need to start addressing before or as we aspire to freely move around the continent. These are very serious house cleaning issues that we need to address simultaneously. To conclude, there are clear benefits to free movement of people on the continent, the potential for inclusive growth, job creation, poverty reduction, improved standard of living. However, clear and strong challenges to integration that exist. We have security concerns, conflicts and wars, leadership deficits, institutional quality, cross-border crime, poor social cohesion, poor acceptance levels of each other's culture, weak implementation capacity, etc. These challenges have been with us since time immemorial. The question is, should we forge ahead in spite of our challenges? We do have other frameworks that address these challenges. The African peer review mechanism addresses some of these challenges, institutional quality. Probably need to push for more countries to ratify it so that we can peer review each other, get each other to come across the line in terms of institutional quality, find solutions to our conflicts and long-standing wars. The Agenda 23 talks about a peaceful and secure Africa. We need that. We need to address all those factors and challenges as we seek to address free movement of people on the continent to realize its economic benefits. We can't assume that there are no challenges. There are serious issues to address simultaneously. So Africa clearly has a lot of work to do going forward. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the flashlights that you have put on this particular matter that we are busy with. I think we are now a little bit much more wiser after your presentation. Honorable members, I think now we need to be going to issues related to security. Although is that Dr. Sekere has already tried to pinpoint something that's here in detail from Dr. Yanvis. I really have struggles. Basically. Yes, I have been helped, and of course is that who Dr. Yan hold a PhD in political science and also a master's degree in management of public policies, and then also a master's degree in international relations. He's a serious scholar. on international matters. And he's going to speak to us on the security situation. He's from the Institute of Security Studies. Thank you very much. If you are ready, you can take us on.
Honorable Chairman, honorable members of the Parliament, dear colleagues, thank you first for the invitation to allow me to speak about this critical issue. I have to apologize first because English is not my main language, so you may have some trouble understanding me because of my accent. So I apologize about that first of all. So today we talk about migration in general. So we have to just recall that migration have existed since the age of time. But in the world today, as other existing challenge, actually, it requires a collective approach through regional integration that to mitigate the risk associated to this phenomenon while increasing these benefits. In the context of Africa, we have to remember to remind that in Africa, regional integration has been considered as a critical tool for full economic development and political empowerment since the independence. However, regional integration has not been that successful, especially in the political and security areas. As many African states had just acquired their sovereignty, many were reluctant to share it, despite the fact that such a share is actually the bedrock of any regional integration efforts. This reality was more acute in the area of movement of people. Despite the acknowledgement by many in Africa that the African border have some kind of artificiality, Africa has remained a continent where regulation regarding the movement of people vary from one country to another. Integration in this area was also a challenge because of the security context prevailing on the continent. As other areas have successfully moved towards full integration, many in Africa have wished to emulate this development, illustrated by the free movement of people, goods and capitals. However, the push for such integration raised many questions in the African context. The first one being how to integrate states at the regional level as national integration remains a challenge. How to integrate states, many of which still include ungoverned space. How to foster integration in a continent which remains insecure in many places. So where other African states have first asserted the control of their territory, then increase the legitimacy of this control, Africa had to do so simultaneously. State consolidation, nation building, establishing an inclusive economy, and foster regional integration. In this regard, the global move towards free movement of people, goods, and capital is both an opportunity and incentive, but also a challenge for a continent where we have a lot of fragile states and non-inclusive economies. So in this regard, I will do my presentation in 2 points. First, I will present the main trends regarding insecurity in Africa today. Then I will look at the option that are supposed to be considered by EU policymakers in relation with migration. First, regarding the trends. I've identified four trends so far regarding stability and instability in Africa so far. The first one being the rise of violent extremist insurgency. Constatation of state authority by violent extremist groups have risen over the last year in Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, Northern Cameroon, and Somalia. Far from being strictly a religious issue, we need to stress that violent extremism is the most recent layer of a series of issues that have been overlooked over the years and left unaddressed by sitting governments. Poor delivery of public service, absence or ineffectiveness of the state, internal communal conflict poorly regulated by state authorities, corruption in local politics, poverty, unemployment, and underemployment. The second trend is what I call the transition challenge. If you look, for example, in Central Africa, the average length of presidency is 27 years, which is quite a long time when you have more than two-thirds of the population who is less than 20. So in this regime, you have more and more contestation by the society. But this contestation so far struggled to translate in political solution, both because of the division among the opposition, but mainly because of the mistrust from the youth mainly toward political parties and politicians. In addition, you have the fact that the state supremacy on the political space gave it a resilience against its internal shocks so far. And the closure of political space could relieve only violence as a vehicle of contestation. The third trend I identify is what I call endemic conflict, which is characterized by the inability of states to break the cycle of instability. Conflict has become the normal state of affairs because competition among political actors occurs mainly through violence given the lack of democratic process. If you look to a country like Sudan, for example, since the independence in 1956, it's only had 10 years of full peace. Most of the years during the existence of Sudan, there have been war in the country. The fourth trend I identified has to do with what I call ungoverned space. If you look at this map, you will see, for example, in the Sahelian Saharan Strip, or in the Eastern GRC, or in the Lake Chad Basin, where you have Boko Haram these days. Ungoverned space are characterized by the lack of state penetration, meaning absence of state institution, lack of physical infrastructure. If you look, for example, at the northeast of Nigeria, this is the part of Nigeria where the road density is the lowest in the country, for example. So you have even population who struggle to go around in the region. And you have the lack of monopoly of the force because you have illegal armed groups, criminal networks, and population with access to arms. And you also have the lack of border control, meaning that gives the way a lot to external interference by other actors. So this is a summary. And the last trend I wanted to talk about was the issue of the response. So far, the AU and the RECs have focused mainly on having a reactive response to this instability challenge. We don't have a lot of proactive response that address really the root cause of instability, which is in most of the case poor governance. Now let's talk about the option related to migration and more specifically to free movement. Today I think we are in a situation of what I call an unknown known, meaning that many declarations at the level of the AU emphasize that the benefits of the free movement of person, goods, service far outweigh the real and potential security and economic challenge that may perceive or generate it. It's important to say that so far we are lacking any empirical study or assessment on the impact of free movement on the peace and security in Africa to corroborate such a claim. Of course, it can be said that so far, the lack of free movement did not stop the spillover of conflict. It did not stop transnational crime. It did not stop human trafficking. But nothing said that it would be otherwise under a new regime. There is still a need for a pre-assessment based on a rigorous and innovative methodology to assess the impact of free movement on the state of peace and security in Africa. Secondly, the security situation in Africa really call for an enhanced border cooperation in Africa. So far, Africa counts 55 states separated by 167 borders. So Africa today have 83,500 kilometers of border, on which only 38% are demarcated. So far we still have 56,000 kilometers border that are still to be demarcated. If you look at the map I showed you earlier, you will see that most of the insecurity that we have today is around border region. If you look at Mali, Niger, Chad, Cameroon, Eastern GRC, Sudan, South Sudan, it's all about border control, border management, border governance. The challenge today is to ensure that there need to be a shift from border control, because most of the response, when you look, for example, at the multinational joint task force in the northeast of Nigeria and in Cameroon, it's about control of the border. It's about regain control from non-state actors. But there is a need to shift from control to governance, because control means security, military. It means a vertical perspective when it's come to the governing of people. Governance is more about responding to the grievance of the people living in this community in order to address the grievance and allow the instability to prosper. So far, the AU has adopted the Niamey Convention that provides a framework for cross-border cooperation. But today, We only have 5 member states who ratified the Niamey Convention on cross-border cooperation: Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Nigeria, and Namibia. The other point I want to address is the fact that there is a need to solve border disputes. We cannot have free movement if we don't have a coherent, cohesive implementation among member states. It means that there is a need to address border disputes in the African framework as soon as possible. Free movement does not mean that much if many states are involved in border disputes because of the lack of demarcation, among others. On a broader sense, the harmonization of a migration regime in Africa calls for the establishment of an effective common definition of collective security that would catalyze the cooperation among our state and society. It is essential that security has the same definition from Cape Town to Dar es Salaam to Yaoundé or Benghazi. Collective security cannot work if a state thinks that its neighbors are the source of instability. In this regard, guaranteeing that the establishment of free movement does not disrupt the already fragile security context requires to embrace a phased and flexible implementation, taking into account regional and local conditions in order to put in place the appropriate safeguards. In conclusion, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Member of the Parliament, Honorable Guest, what is the state of security today in Africa? It's a mixed picture. Peace is consolidating in many places, but there are new challenges that were not foreseen. First, violent extremism, the impact of climate change that still need to be assessed, the development in the world economy, and in some places we have to say there is still no end in sight for conflicts. Insecurity remains a push factor for migration for two reasons. First, it affects the ability of states to control its border, to regulate the movement of people, but also to respond to the citizen aspiration. Free movement is an opportunity to bring closer African citizens, foster cooperation among member states when it comes to migration, but there is also a need to ensure that people have opportunities at home. Africa should avoid a situation where one can only fulfill its potential through migration. Brain and capacity drain are issues that need to be addressed. Finally, there is a political scientist who often said that there is a need to combine in every situation the pessimism of the intellect with the optimism of the will, meaning that we need to be rigorous in our assessment, identify the challenge, and then have the courage to draw solutions to this challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Doctor. You have taken us through quite a good number of points that are very pertinent to what we want to hear and want to know. And I'm sure you have just opened our minds a lot more to consume the information that is in front of us on these issues of security. Thank you very much. I think we need to welcome Mr. Popo Mfu. He's not here.
No.
He's not yet arrived.
No.
I just mean to welcome him of having arrived. Of having arrived, because he was the only one that has not arrived, I think, since morning. Honorable members, I think now we should be going to matters of refugees. And from Scala Breen Institute for Human Mobility in Africa. And they are our constant participant in the work of this committee and in quite a good number of legislative processes that we have here, especially when we deal with immigration as well as refugee amendment bills here. They're always handy to make an input and try and assist us. Then we therefore have to welcome Mr. Sergio Cacciotto, the executive director for Scala Breen. Then he's going to address us on issues of refugees. Since, of course, the establishment of Scala Green in April 2014, Sergio is the Associate Director of the Institute for Human Mobility in Africa, a research center based in Cape Town. He previously worked in South Africa for a local NGOs and in Italy for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. He holds a master's degree in development studies from the University of the Western Cape and a master's degree in refugee rights and migration studies from the University of Rome. His current research focuses on the diverse leadership structures of refugees in South Africa. He jointly teaches the Master of Arts course on migration and development at the Institute for Social Development, the University of Western Cape. Honorable members, that is Sergio Kashiot. You may proceed if you are ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, thank you for the invitation and for the opportunity to be here today and to present on this important topic. During my presentation, I'm going to discuss about some of the considerations concerning refugees and asylum seekers in an integrated visa-free regime. As already mentioned by some of my colleagues, free movement of people in Africa is a fundamental pillar for the continental integration process. And it is in this context that the Agenda 2063 aims at promoting integration through migration and to strengthen migration governance, regional integration, and development. It is a matter of fact that migration movements within Africa are much larger than those outside Africa. And in fact, if we look at statistics, the majority of those who migrate internationally, about 80%, remain within the African continent. And this is despite often news and media portrays Africa migration to Europe as something uncontrollable. In addition to that, the majority of movements remain within the same sub-region. And if we look at the case of Southern Africa, 65% of those migrating internationally remain within this sub-region. So this reinforces the aspiration to reduce barriers and ease the movement of people within the African continent. We also know that in general, African citizens are in favor of free movement, and a survey conducted in 2016 in 36 African countries shows that 56% of those interviews supported free movement across the border. Now, if we take a closer look at Southern Africa, and in particular at South Africa, we notice that the majority of movements involve migrants from neighboring countries. And in fact, in 2016, the five top countries were all SADC countries: Lesotho, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Swaziland, and Botswana. And in fact, migration in this region is largely happening across borders, and is characterized by circular patterns, also because of historical reasons. It makes sense, therefore, to take progressive steps aiming at abolishing visas and facilitating the free movement of people, as this will create new legal channels for migration, and in the long run can also contribute to reduce irregular migration. Now, if we look at the movement of asylum seekers and refugees within the region, these also involve partially SADC nationals. And among the others, we have Zimbabweans, Congolese, and Malawians, who in some cases abuse the asylum system because of the lack of any other legal systems to facilitate the entry of labor migrants, in particular unskilled and semi-skilled migrants from the region. For all these reasons, the introduction of provisions aimed at facilitating free movement of people, both at regional and continental level, should be welcomed and encouraged. Other countries have expressed their intention of enhancing free movement, economic and social integration among member states. However, free movement is not enforced yet, and most labor migration in the region is irregular and unmanaged. My colleagues have discussed already about the challenges, what are the positive aspects, the negative aspects of free movement regime. Today there are two questions that I would like to address. The first one is, what are the main concerns for refugees and asylum seekers in a continental free movement regime? And the second question is, in which measure will a common African passport affect migration and refugee policies of nation states, knowing that free movement protocols are not refugee instruments? These are not easy or simple questions, and there's also no study addressing refugees and asylum seekers' concern in an Africa-integrated regime, simply because such regime has not been enforced yet. So we stepped into sort of unknown territory. And it is, however, possible to look at other existing regional agreements, such as the ECOWAS protocol, relating to the free movement of persons, residents, and establishment, and draw some conclusions on the implication on refugees and asylum seekers. Now, in order to elaborate on these two questions, I need to refer to one important document, which is the AU Protocol on Free Movement of People in Africa, which is a major step in the realization of the African vision on free movement of persons. And I personally had the pleasure to attend a couple of meetings where the draft of this protocol was discussed. We can say that this protocol is a foundational stone in the institutionalization of free movement of people and putting in place the African passport. The legal basis for the protocol include the AU Constitutive Act, the Abuja Treaty, the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, and the AU Agenda 2063. The protocol should be built on policies and practices of the RECs, which constitutes the building blocks of the AU. This process of drafting a continental free movement of people was initiated in 2015, when the AU Assembly mandated the African Union Commission to develop this protocol by 2018. And last month, in October, the second African Union meeting of Specialized Technical Committee on Migration, Refugees and International Displaced People has completed the draft protocol on the movement of people in the continent. If we look at this draft, the protocol creates basically a system that guarantees access to all African citizens to all countries, meaning abolishing visas, visa on arrival, and no visa fee. Some countries have already introduced these provisions. The protocol is also bound to facilitate entry, residence, and establishment of members of the African Union through a gradual three-phase approach. The protocol will also enable an African passport, a visa-free Africa, a free trade area, and other arrangements that will facilitate further integration. For instance, we'll discuss the issue of social portability. This protocol comprises of three phases. The first phase regulates the entry and stay of African citizens up to 90 days without any administrative check or requirements. It does, though, establish cases where free entry for certain category of people is prohibited, for example, the case of inadmissible migrants. And these cases include issue of national security and reasons of public health. Phase two of the protocol deals with the rights of residents, meaning the possibility for African citizens to take up employment according to national provisions and to remain in the country after ending the job. The third phase introduces the right of establishment, meaning the creation of business and enterprises. There are already some considerations that can be made with regards to refugees and asylum seekers. First of all, this AU protocol, as any other free movement protocol, is not a refugee instrument. Nonetheless, there are some implications for refugees and asylum seekers, which I'm now going to discuss. The protocol does not intend to limit the applicability of benefits conferred by other regional or universal instruments or agreements. So this is also very important, and means that where favorable provisions overlap any given right to African citizens who are also refugees, the most favorable provision applies. So African refugees may enjoy rights under the free movement protocol in addition to the rights they are entitled under international refugee law. The 1951 Convention relating to the state of refugees also aimed to ensure that refugees enjoy fundamental rights, and contains a similar provision which clarifies that refugees may benefit from more favorable provisions where these provisions exist. Now let's look at the first phase of the protocol, which deals with the rights of entry and what are the implications for asylum seekers and refugees. And as I mentioned earlier, in an integrated visa regime, there are such implications. Particularly, I would like to look at the issue of admission and entry, which is strictly related to the African passport. As my colleagues have already explained, in a visa-free regime, an open regime, all African citizens have the right to entry into the territory of another member state without a visa by simply providing a travel document, which in future can be the African passport or a refugee travel document. There are, however, some cases where free movement can be limited or suspended, but in general, people have the right to entry for 90 days without any police formality required. Now, if we look at asylum seekers, they also enjoy a similar right of admission. And their entry normally cannot be refused, because we know that asylum seekers, they have the right to an individual assessment. So asylum seekers entering a country without authorization are not subject to any penalties, as long as they, of course, comply with the national legislation. So if they enter through a port of entry and if they report within 5 days to the nearest refugee reception office, their entry cannot be refused. There is one way to refuse entry to asylum seekers, and it deals with the principle of the first safe country. And we know that there are certain countries in the world, such as Australia and Canada, which applies the first safe country principle, which is not recognized under international law. So my first consideration in this context, dealing with the issue of entry, is that in a visa-free regime, it might be less convenient for those individuals who are not genuine asylum seekers to abuse the asylum system, because in any case they have the right to entry and stay as African citizens with no need for any administrative procedures, and they don't need to regularize their stay through the asylum system. To give you a practical example, we can look at the recent case of the former president of Catalonia, who moved to Belgium after the contested vote for independence. In his case, it was not necessary for him to apply for asylum to have the right to stay, because as a European citizen, he could already benefit from a visa-free regime and reside in any European country for 90 days. So these are some considerations about the first phase of the protocol, the right of entry and admissions. With regards to the right of residence and establishment, the initial idea was for that to remain under national jurisdiction. And there was quite a heated debate around this particular issue, whether to add phase two and phase three to the protocol. So initially, the main scope of this protocol was to put in place a system which guarantees access for all African citizens to all countries, so regulate only entry and admission. But later it was decided to introduce the right of residence and establishment as well. So what are some of the considerations that we can make about the main concerns for refugees and asylum seekers in a continental free movement regime? I already said that the protocol on free movement and the African passport are not per se refugee instruments and are not addressing directly refugee issues. The first consideration is that all continental integrated regimes require an harmonized national migration policy and a common approach to respond to the protection needs of refugees and asylum seekers. It is difficult to have integration without a sort of harmonization. Secondly, because of issues of entry and admissions, and the right of entry that Africans enjoy under a free visa regime, it becomes very important to strengthen mechanisms to differentiate and address the problem of mixed flows, and as I was saying, differentiate between asylum seekers and other categories of migrants. So it's important to make these distinctions, particularly in a free visa regime. The third consideration is that the free movement system is not unconditional. There are some limitations and there are some conditions. There are cases where entry can be prohibited and access can be limited. And if we look at the white paper on international migration, it introduces an individual risk-based approach to manage efficiently and effectively cross-border movement of people. It also introduces some limited provision to a free movement regime for certain categories of people. For example, African citizens should enter South Africa visa-free as a starting point on condition that there are some returns agreement in place. Visa should be required only where objective risks are identified, such as countries with a high numbers of nationals who abuse the asylum system. So there are already within the current policy document some provision to restrict the movement of certain category of people and to put some limitations to a full visa-free regime. Next consideration is that any efforts to ease the movement of Africans and reduce the abuse of the asylum system, for example, regulation programs and the introductions of new visas, should be welcomed and encouraged as well. This system can in fact create new legal channels for migration, reduce abuse of the asylum system, and eventually reduce the number of irregular migrants. And to conclude, the last comment is that a free integrated visa regime requires equality of treatment for refugees and other African citizens in the exercise of free movement, right of residence, and right of establishment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that was said to you. Then he has highlighted on issues of refugees, is that the integration that we're speaking about, then would pose challenges that we need to also consider issues of refugees in an integrated Africa. That we must pay attention to that. The current protocol doesn't speak to that. We can't ignore, as we have already been informed about those hotspots in Africa, which of course if they continue as hotspots, and they will always generate people that runs away from conflict, and therefore the issue of asylum seekers and refugees will then be a constant issue to be dealt with within the African continent. Thanks for Sergio for having highlighted that. That takes us, honorable members, then to the next point, where we would invite Mr. Mfubu to actually speak to us. And Mr. Mfubu holds a Bachelor of Commerce and an LLB from Rhodes University, and is currently doing his Master's in Law, and actually is the dissertation that is keeping you busy now. He has participated in disciplinary boards in Rhodes University and Rhodes University Law Faculties as well, and in the Equal Education Law Center, has given services there, and then the UCT Refugee Rights Unit and Open Society Foundation for South Africa also has given service, and at the moment is attached to the Law Clinic in the University of Cape Town, and he is of course going to talk to the legal implications of Agenda 2063 as it pertains to migration, and he's not having the slides, he's going to just talk to the documents that are in front of him, as well as our international migration policy. Honorable members, let's invite Mr. Fu.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair, and to the honorable members of this committee. Good morning, colleagues, and to the members of the public. My name is Popo Mfubu. I'm attorney at the UCT Refugee Rights Unit, and I also lecture their refugee law course at the University of Cape Town. The Refugee Rights Unit, other than being an academic unit, is also a fully-fledged law clinic that provides free legal services to forced migrants, those being asylum seekers and refugees. We are also a legal implementing partner for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and we have been a legal implementing partner for the past decade. The committee has asked us to discuss what are the possible legal implications of regional and continental integration. As a starting point, I think it's important for us to examine what our current migration legislative framework looks like in order for us to determine how far we are in achieving the goals that are enshrined in the African Vision 2063. If we look to the vision itself as guidance, under its sections, under the aspiration section, it talks about a vision for an integrated African continent. Paragraph 19 of the vision refers to a continent with seamless borders and management of cross-border resources through dialogue. Paragraph 22 notes that the political unity of Africa will be the culmination of the integration process, including the free movement of people. The call for free movement is also echoed in paragraph 25 of the vision. Lastly, the vision, in its call to action, which is in essence a road map, which envisions the manner in which we will achieve the goals, also makes reference to, in paragraph 67, subsection K, for an African passport. So to recap, in order for us to assess how far we are in meeting our objectives in terms of the vision, we need to then examine to what extent have we integrated our migration regime with the rest of the region, and to what extent our migration policy allows to any kind of degree, some sense of free movement throughout the continent. So if we look at our migration policy, our Migration Act, soon after democracy, South Africa began to dismantle its apartheid legislation. And one of the first things to go were the Aliens Control Act, which has now been replaced with our Migration Act 13 of 2002, which commenced in 2003. A lot of very progressive and liberal provisions came with the Immigration Act. However, after a number of years since the enactment of the Immigration Act, we have begun to notice, through several amendments to the Immigration Act, that South Africa's approach to migration has not made migration easier. The approach has been largely to either prevent or deter the flow of migration. The amendments, especially the ones of 2014 to the Immigration Act and the regulations, have made it increasingly difficult, especially for African migrants, to seek employment and to sojourn in the Republic. Coincidentally, this discussion around Vision 2063 and what the possible legal ramifications will be for us come at a time where South Africa is embarking on a process to overhaul its entire migration regime through the Green and White Paper on International Migration. We have through written submissions made a number of comments on the Green Paper, and largely it has been positive. The strides that South Africa is now making towards its migration framework are largely positive because for a long while we have lagged behind. However, we are alarmed at the strong rhetoric and the discourse that is in the Green Paper and the White Paper on a large focus on national security and the protection of what is referred to in the Green Paper as national interests. Not to get me wrong, security is important. However, if it becomes the impetus, if it becomes the lens upon which we examine what our obligations are in relation to migration, we may lose sight of what is important where migration is concerned. We don't have to look far if you look at the United States and its current approach, it's leading on its current approach to migration. Taking on a very strong securitization approach can have quite devastating effects. However, there are some notable positive strides that South Africa has made towards ensuring that that movement throughout the continent is made easier, especially in the SADC region. The Zimbabwean Special Dispensation Permit, which was issued in 2010, which was largely designed to ease the burden on our refugee system that was caused largely by Zimbabwean migrants that were migrating to South Africa as a result of the economic collapse in Zimbabwe. That permit was introduced in 2010 and was renewed in 2014 or 2015, depending on when it expired, and was replaced by the Zimbabwean Special Permit. That permit is due to expire this year, with the option for it to be extended for another period through a Zimbabwean exemption permit. A similar permit for Lesotho was also developed and rolled out last year. Immigration permits and with relaxed conditions were also offered to Angolans after the cessation of refugee status was announced in 2013. Many holders of these permits have been able to apply for permanent residence and are awaiting their decisions. And even though the SADC protocol on free movement has not come into effect yet, South Africa does offer either no visa requirements or visa on arrival requirements for many countries in the SADC region. These initiatives, though bilateral in nature, are an example of how we can foster good migration practices in the region. A similar approach, however, must be adopted on a more regional level. What can be gleaned from the sections of the African Union Vision 2063 I've referred to earlier require integration to take place, and there needs to be a commitment by African states to ensure that their domestic laws are in line with the goals of the vision, and that these translate into regional and that these translate at the regional and continental level. The implications for us is that our domestic legislation and its architecture will have to be developed to ensure that it better facilitates and accommodates the flow of migrants through our borders. First on a regional level, and then the rest of the continent. I do, at this stage, want to emphasize also the points that were raised by Dr. Emmanuel in his presentation, that because the ECOWAS region has had such a long time of regional migration, they have been able to learn from their mistakes and have been able to learn about what works and what doesn't work. If on a regional level is a SADC, we, as South Africa, we play much more of a stronger role in ensuring that the remaining countries that have not signed the protocol sign the protocol and that it is ratified so that it can come into effect. That at least on a regional level, we can begin to integrate and harmonize our migration policies so that when we take this discussion forward at an intra-regional level and the continental level, we have at least a basis upon which we can work out or formulate a continental migration framework and also an African passport. If the protocol comes into effect, it'll help strengthen the legal and policy framework which governs entry procedures and residency, and will also provide much needed protection for migrants in the region, and might even help to modify public attitudes towards a more pro-migration, or at least, at the very least, a less anti-migrant sentiment. The protocol will ensure that in the SADC region, we can work towards harmonizing our laws to deal with migration practices such as entry and admissions, exits, and in some cases, in some strict cases, expulsion. We have to develop a framework with regards to residency and what form or nature that will take. And lastly, how the region will formulate approaches to how migrants establish themselves with respect to how they enter and how they gain permission to engage in economic activity and employment. This South Africa cannot do alone and requires South Africa to take a stronger stance in the region by advocating that many other states sign the protocol on free movement in the SADC region. This then will allow us to start to formulate much more responsive migration policies, and our Immigration Act and Border Management Act will have to take into account our obligations in the region and our obligations in relation to the Vision 2063. Thank you.
Thank you for your input, and I'm sure also it also assists us to actually wake up for what is actually coming in front of us, and we should be alive to it, the legal implications, and thank you again for your input, Lupoko. I think members would speak to you for further clarity as we move on. Honorable members, I think we have exhausted our guests, then we will need to have an opportunity to actually speak to them, and if there are issues that they need to clarify a little bit more. Can we then have a break of some 15 minutes, and then so that we can have some stretch legs and stomach economics, and then we come back into a panel session. In other words, is that at quarter past then we'll be beginning with the panel session. Thank you. Those that can indulge themselves there, the table I think is full. I'm not sure outside whether the tea still exists. And then there is no tea outside, but it will worth our while to stretch our legs as well. Thank you very much. Let's meet again at one of us 11.